Transmission commence in 3, 2, 1.
Welcome to Level 7.
RandomChatter.com presents
the Strategic Homeland Intervention Enforcement and Logistics Division.
Do you copy?
Perimeter breach.
Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Case files.
Authorizing.
Just call us S.H.I.E.L.D.
Access granted.
Colson, get back to base.
Welcome back, agents. I trust you've all been suitably briefed on our most recent encounter. We'll be your hosts on Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Case Files. I'm Director Shepard.
And I'm Director Stolte.
And you have been authorized to undergo debriefing on the most recent mission from Agent Coulson and his operatives. Presented to the public as a dramatic hour-long television series known as Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Fortunately, you have all been cleared to know the truth.
So, this week we're going to be investigating Season 1, Episode 3, titled The Asset.
Asset.
The Asset. So, get out your notes here. October 8th, 2013 is when this originally aired. Marissa Tancheroen and Jed Whedon were the writers of this episode, and it was directed by Milan Shaloff.
Oh, he's a... Wow. That's a interesting name. I've never heard of that guy before.
Milan Shaloff.
Yes, very nice. Oh.
I like saying the names of these people that work on this. So, well, the agents' new mission here. You know, they've got to save a S.H.I.E.L.D. Wait, is he considered an agent or
they were calling him an asset as well, or calling him an asset. So, Dr. Hall.
So he had been taken by someone. They had to go and try to rescue him, and of course, you know, chaos ensued. But
that's a good way to put it. So we will we'll be getting into the details on the episode here in a second, but let's go over some of the interesting S.H.I.E.L.D. related news. So ratings for episode 2 had come out. It was a sharp drop in the ratings after the first episode, which first episode was around, I think it was like 12.7 million viewers originally. And then the second week, ratings had dropped down about 4.7 million people. So, you know, that's, I guess it's to be expected. It's probably something that they weren't crazy about, but that is, you know, that's not anything that should be concerning anybody. There was a slight, even a slight drop for the third week here. They were at 7.8 million viewers for the third episode, only slightly behind The Voice for ages 18 to 49, but they were the number one show at 8 p.m. So, you know, that means something, which... I'm sorry. Yeah, Josh.
Well, it seems like they're, you know, they would probably consider those still successful numbers, but I think they want to make sure that that stays a little bit more consistent, I would think. So,
well, you know, and they were hyping the pilot so much. I mean, for it to drop between a pilot and then the first episode of a series, not that big, you know, I think that's expected. I mean, I don't know that anybody could sustain those kind of numbers. You know, I'm not a student of TV ratings or anything like that, but that's just abnormally high. You know, 8.7 to 7.8, that's only 900,000 people that it dropped between weeks 2 and week 3. You know, that's, I think, you know, again, 3 data points is not enough to, you know, make a trend or anything like that.
No.
So
I think you're going to have to keep an eye on this for you know, the season that they have, you know, have now ordered. And I think what, like I said, you know, consistent numbers and not that steady drop is kind of what they're going to look like. I just don't know what ABC's expectation for a successful show would be different than, say, like, you know, CW or one of the smaller networks. So so hopefully they can start building on that.
Yeah, and I guess what their, you know, 8 o'clock numbers versus like 9 o'clock or 10 o'clock numbers would look like, because obviously those are all different demographics they're reaching. But yeah, the good news is, like you mentioned, they do have a full season. They had an additional 9 episodes ordered, so they went from 13 to 22 episodes. So we get at least a year out of this. So we will see Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. continuing through the release of Thor, The Dark World, which is the second Thor film, as well as through the release of Captain America 2, Captain America, The Winter Soldier. So, and I know that S.H.I.E.L.D. in general has a larger part in the Captain America film. Definitely Black Widow's in that. Nick Fury also expected to make some appearances in that. So I think, at least I would hope there'd be some impact on the TV show along with that film.
Yeah. I wonder how much, if they'll have much or any of a crossover between the two stories. I mean, I'm assuming that they were filmed at different times, but I think that would be kind of nice since they are considered to be in the same universe. So I hope they have some sort of connection between the two.
I'm sure they'll be, I'm sure as soon as the movie comes out, they'll have, for 3 weeks in a row, they'll have nods to some plot point, you know, and just keep mentioning it over and over and over again.
Yeah, based on what we've seen so far, I would guess that too.
Exactly. Also, this month, Marvel is doing special S.H.I.E.L.D. covers for seven of their comics. The images are the group shot of the six agents, plus individual covers, one for each of the different agents. And it appears on the following titles. I'm sorry, not this month, next month in November. The titles that this appears on, which don't necessarily seem to make sense to me, but it's All New X-Men number 19, Guardians of the Galaxy number 9, Iron Man number 18, Nova number 10, Superior Spider-Man number 22, Uncanny Avengers number 1, and Uncanny X-Men number 14. I don't know. Had you taken a look at any of the variant covers here that they've got?
I haven't seen them yet. No,
they're photo covers. They're the photo images that they've been using to promote the episodes, or you know the it's like the press kit photos and stuff like that. I'm not crazy about them. They're nothing. You know, if they were like art covers, each one done by a different artist or something like that, yeah. I think that might have been cool. But
yeah, I'm looking at them now. You're right. They do kind of just look like ABC promotional pictures. So
yeah. And I'm not a big fan. If I'm buying a comic book, which is you know art, I don't want a photo cover. It was cool back in like the 70s and 80s because a photo cover was. You know, they would dress someone up in like a Spider-Man costume and take a picture of him kind of in character. But now their photo covers, you know, are just, you know, it's the same kind of photo stock or stock photo imagery and stuff we see all over the place. So
boy, it doesn't even look like there's one of all six of them standing there. And then one individually, and it doesn't even look like they're different pictures of the people. I think they photoshopped them individually in there.
Well, I think, the photos were all taken individually, and I think they were photoshopped into the group photo, which is usually how they do those kind of promo photos anyway. But
Yeah, I've got to say I'm not a fan either. Let's see some art. I'd love to see some art.
Yeah. So, but anyway, if you are a big fan of the show and like collecting variant covers, you've got those seven to look out for coming in November. Also just announced for episode number 6 coming up, there is a guest star, Titus Welliver, who fans of Lost will remember as, what was he considered? He was like the Dark Man. I don't remember. He didn't really have a name. He was Jacob's brother on the island, but I don't remember what his character's name was.
I don't know if he had a name either, but.
He had a name, I think, that we found out towards the end of the season, and it was like, well, that's just stupid. You know, it was like Josh or
like
something
Steve
like that.
Or
no,
something.
It wasn't Josh. Sorry, man. But he was in the short, the Marvel one-shot, Item 47, which came out on the Avengers Blu-ray, which was about these two characters finding one of the Chitauri guns in New York after the battle that S.H.I.E.L.D. missed and didn't get cleaned up, and they were using it to rob banks. So he was kind of the agent in charge. So that agent, whatever that agent's name is, Agent Jacobs, I think, or something like that, is coming back and will reprise his role in episode 6, which is called. That's F.
Did you just cut out? Were you cutting out there?
What? Yeah. No, that's the name of the title. It's.
Oh. It sounds like you're getting a shock over there. What?
FZZT.
So it's either about, you know, somebody shocking, or there it's a Velcro episode.
It's the Velcro Avenger or something like that. And then I also wanted just to mention popped up to New York Comic Con for the day yesterday.
you literally popped up there.
I mean, I literally went up for about 5.5-6 hours and then came back. But there is some S.H.I.E.L.D. stuff up there. They did have a no like freebies or anything like that, and I'm not sure what they were doing in terms of if there's any panels related to it, but they did have Lola on display in front of a giant Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Backdrop. So that was pretty cool to see. It's not really necessarily the Lola we see on screen. I was really hoping that the Porsche logo on the back would have been replaced with the S.H.I.E.L.D. logo like we saw in the pilot episode.
Oh, no, it wasn't, huh?
No, and I took a picture of the dashboard inside, and I'm pretty sure there's not even the extra button that he used to convert it to hover mode. So I think it's just a Porsche, you know, whatever he said it was, a Porsche 1963 Roadster or whatever it was that you know they rented from somewhere and brought in and parked. But
I thought it was a Corvette.
Or sorry, why was I saying Porsche? Right, you are correct. It is a Corvette.
Oh, okay.
I'm right, getting it confused because the original S.H.I.E.L.D. car is a Porsche.
Oh, wow. Okay.
904.
Right.
So that's my confusion.
I feel as if, you know, they're not really representing the actual car, and they should give that one to me and replace it with the real one so people can are satisfied.
Yeah. Well, what I'll do is I'll make sure to get these photos up on our Facebook page over at facebook.com/agentspodcast, and or you can just search on Facebook for Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. case files, and you can take a look at those. You can also see there's a cool cosplayer I saw. It was a black gentleman who was you know, had shaved head. He was had the long black leather trench coat. He was cosplaying as Coulson. No, I'm kidding. He was cosplaying as Nick Fury.
And, that would have been good too.
Yeah, he you know, he had the patch on, but then he had his dog with him, which is, I don't know, what, the Golden Retriever maybe? And the dog was wearing a S.H.I.E.L.D. Outfit with the little S.H.I.E.L.D. logo on it and was also wearing an eye patch. This dog was so good, it wasn't messing with the eye patch or anything like that.
He was Nick Fury?
He was Nick Fury. Very good. Very good. I think you stole that from me from earlier, right?
Oh, yeah.
So anyway, I'm sure as time goes on, we'll see other interesting stuff coming out of the New York Comic Con in terms of photos or maybe other information. And if we find anything else out, we will bring that to you next week. So why don't we just go ahead and get into our discussion topics here. What do you say?
Absolutely.
All right. So as we get started here, I'm going to combine the discussion topics kind of with our references. There weren't too many references. It was mostly stuff that we've, you know, reported here before, references to the Avengers or the plane being called S.H.I.E.L.D. 616. If you want to find out about those, go back and check out our previous episodes at randomchatter.com. But Josh, I want to talk to you or ask you a little bit about Franklin Hall, who is the scientist, the S.H.I.E.L.D. scientist that gets kidnapped by, was it Ian Quinn, I guess?
Ian Quinn.
Right, who has, looks like he owns the island of Malta with this security grid and everything like that, and wants him to come and work on his gravitonium project that he's discovered the largest deposit of gravitonium, which is a new element. And I just wanted to kind of get your take on this because this is an existing Marvel character, but I know you're not as up on the Marvel universe as you are in the DC universe, so why don't you tell us what your impressions of Dr. Hall were and how the storyline played out for you with all the teaser and stuff at the end.
Well, as far as the storyline goes, with him being somebody that at first you think, you know, wants to be rescued and then doesn't want to be rescued, I really kind of liked how that played out. I liked how, I'm not sure that it was a shocking surprise because I could kind of see it coming when he was talking to Quinn that he didn't necessarily agree with Quinn's vision of using this stuff.
Right.
So that wasn't like a shocking surprise, but I like that it went there. I like that it didn't, you know, he didn't just decide to agree with him
and that he was kind of a double agent and stuff like that.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I really actually kind of liked the way it went. As far as the character goes, you know, I saw kind of mixed reactions to this character. I think some people really want it to be closely tied to the comic book universe, and since I'm not so tied down to that, I thought it was. I thought he was a pretty successful portrayal of a character. I would say more so even than Quinn. Quinn wasn't, to me, that interesting.
Quinn was the
typical.
Yeah, he was the villain, you know, the megalomaniac, rich villain kind of guy.
Yeah. Yeah, so he to me, wasn't that interesting. I thought he could have been a little bit, I don't know, more sinister or something. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. He just, it wasn't much to me. But as far as the scientist goes, I kind of liked him. I liked that he seemed to know Coulson a little bit, and you know, their banter at the end, and the way they that was my favorite scene. I think probably when Coulson and him were confronting each other. I guess they weren't really fighting, you know,
negotiating.
But when they were yeah. And they were flying all over the room because of the gravitonium going crazy.
Right.
I thought that was kind of clever and really well done. So I liked the scientist. I think maybe, I don't know. Cause now my take is that this Graviton, is that his name? The comic books,
yep.
the character,
mm-hmm. Yes.
he's a villain.
Yes.
And I think maybe they could have pushed him a little bit more to the edge before he fell and supposedly died. And it would have made it a little bit more believable as a villain, I suppose.
Okay.
But,
well, I mean, I don't,
you know, kind of pushes him to insanity or something, you know, but you know what? I got it. I'm not really expressing it very well because I can't think of any real criticisms. I actually liked the way you played out. I liked the character. I thought it was well done. And I liked it better than the portrayal of some of the characters last week.
Well, I was going to ask you, though, like, what specifically, you know, did you think he had died when he was sucked in? Or at that point, did you even know that they were going to do that little tease that they did at the end with the hand coming out?
Okay, so here's how it went for me. Number one, I was surprised that Coulson did that because he doesn't strike me as someone that would kill like that. I get that he was backed into a corner, then he felt that he didn't have a choice.
Mm-hmm.
But it surprised me, not in a bad way. I thought it worked out just fine. It did not surprise me that he didn't die. I never really expected him to die if he fell there. Now,
right.
Now if he fell and they showed him, you know, sprawled out all bloody on the floor next to that or something like that, then I would have expected he would have died, but that's not what happened at all.
Right.
So this being a comic book type show, that's exactly what I expected to happen. And I expected it to him to become a villain. But kind of based on what we've seen in the first couple episodes, I really didn't think they were going to do that little teaser at the end, because like last week, you know, it all seemed so kind of wrapped up and finished, which
yeah.
I didn't like. And in this one, they, you know, had the, we have a spoiler policy. Everybody's watched the episode, right? I can say what's happened.
If you haven't watched the episode, I mean, you should go
What are you listening to us for?
Yeah, exactly.
So when his hand popped out, you know, the silver hand popped out of the Graviton, that was cool. I liked that a lot. And I was glad because finally now we've got something to connect this episode throughout the throughout the season.
Yep.
And that's what I've been looking for. So a kind of a long rambling explanation of,
no, that's
of
cool.
me saying thumbs up on the scientist.
So, yeah, I mean, so a couple things that I had. I think it's interesting the way they presented him. The origin story for this character, Franklin Hall, a.k.a. Graviton, is – in broad strokes, very true to his origins in the Marvel Comics. He was fighting the Avengers at the time that he was created, but he fell into the gravitonium in the same fashion, and it fused with his body, and he became the kind of slightly mad villain, Graviton. Now, what I like about this is that like you say, Coulson and Hall have some sort of history together. They've gone back, and we know Fitzsimmons they were students of Hall back at the academy or whatever. If I wasn't mistaken, I think Hall was at least one of their SOs. Or maybe I'm just confusing a couple lines of dialogue there. But the fact that Coulson has to make this choice at the end and basically chooses to, you know, just use Hall as the catalyst to stop the gravitonium from, you know, going nuclear or, you know, going gravimetric or...
Gravelier.
But, you know, that's obviously some... intense foreshadowing for when the character comes back, you know, and he will have some kind of vendetta against Coulson. You know, it's like, you know, Coulson created him, right? So this is going to be a problem that Coulson's going to have to deal with at some point in the future. It took me until just about the end of my second viewing. The actor who portrayed Franklin Hall, Ian Hurt, I believe is his name, looked very familiar, but I couldn't quite place him. I don't know if you had identified him at all or looked up or anything.
I felt the same way. He looked like somebody I'd seen recently.
He has previously played a two-faced villain in a very successful film franchise. Does that help at all? I'll give you a hint.
I'm just covering up half his face.
He was okay. He was Professor Quirrell in Harry Potter and the Sorcerer's Stone.
All right. Yeah.
So, wow. Yeah. I mean, I thought he did a really good job. So, the only thing that I'm interested to see how they're going to do is Graviton. It usually has a full head of dark hair. And, of course, has a big white cape, you know, and spandex and stuff like this. So I'll be interested to see what they do in terms of the outfit. You know, I hope it's not just kind of, you know, a leathery, you know, thing.
Let me ask you about that as far as that goes, as far as superhero costumes go in, you know, TV shows and movies. Where do you fall on the spectrum of liking those?
I think the when the X-Men came out, when Bryan Singer's X-Men film came out, I was really against what they did for the uniforms. I understand why they did what they did for the uniforms, but, you know, going to this kind of leathery thing, they kept kind of the X, but I like the individuality, you know, and just like the bright colors of the X-Men uniforms. They're just really snappy, but I can see, you know, they're trying to make it more realistic. As far as the Avengers and the current Marvel continuity goes for the MCU films, you know, Iron Man's armor it looks like Iron Man's armor. That's awesome. The Hulk looks like the Hulk. Thor looks like Thor. Captain America, they came as close as they could without it looking too cheesy, but really, you know, they put him in, when he was in the USO show, they put him in the, you know, the traditional Captain America costume with the wings on the helmet and stuff like that, on the cowl, I guess. And I liked what they did with his uniform in the Captain America film, you know, where it was the webbing from the... from like the bomber jacket or the flight jacket or whatever he had that looks like the stripes on his chest or on his stomach and everything like that. And I've seen some of the designs, what they've done for Captain America 2 and how they've changed his costume. And I like that. I mean, it's really close to what the comic book has done. And of course now in the comics, they're changing his costume around a little bit to look more like what was in the films. The Black Widow, her costume is pretty easy because it is kind of a black spandex thing. Hawkeye, I would like to see more purple. It's very muted, so it's not quite what it probably could be. But you know, they're trying to do a balance, and I understand that.
Right. So what about villains? Okay, so we got this guy Graviton. I mean, you could go ultra, you know, comic book costume with the cape and the colors and all. But is it going to fit into this?
So I'm kind of torn because you like look at Loki, right? And he comes out and, you know, he is wearing the clothes that he wears in the comics and stuff like this. Same with the Red Skull. But again, you know, it's, you know, this guy's face and stuff. And I don't know. If he kind of goes mad because he's in there, I think they could make him just mad and
that would pull it off.
Right. That could easily pull it off. But I don't think they'll go as, you know, garish as the spandex looking suit with the big white cape and
right.
Being the fact that he has no hair, I'm just, you know, I think the reason they do the flowing hair in the comic book is so when he's affecting the gravity, you know, they have his hair flying around and stuff, you know, to right. you know, make it more dynamic and all. So,
right. Well, it seems like, you know, one of the solutions for that they do anymore is they just mute the colors, you know, whether it's, you know, Superman or
yeah.
or even Loki, you know, I mean, the colors were similar but muted. And
that's true. They are more they more fit into the environment. It's not all garish, I guess, is
exactly, yeah.
the term.
So.
Which, you know, which is cool, but, there's a reason why fans like the characters and the costumes that they wear because, you know, they're so easily identifiable. Like, you can show people just, you know, parts of a costume or the color scheme for characters. I don't know if you've seen these things where they take, like, you know, there's a designer guy and he just takes, like, a rectangular bar and he puts, you know, colored stripes in it to represent uh-huh. characters, you know, like red on the bottom and then blue and then red and then blue, yellow, red. And it's like, oh, my, and black on top. And it's like, oh, that's Superman. You know,
exactly.
that's like the color order for Superman or Batman or, you know, whatever it is. So, you know, the color scheme is important to these characters. And I think the use of color for characters is also important. I don't know if you watched Breaking Bad, but the clothing person, I'm told the wardrobe department person, designed color schemes for each of the characters to reflect their mood. And so, like, you'd see Walter White when he was being a nice enough guy, he was wearing kind of earth tones, and then he'd switch over to his Heisenberg persona and he'd be wearing black. And then his sister-in-law would be wearing purple all the time, except, you know, one time she's not. She's wearing a different color, and it's like, okay, well, what does that say about her state of mind? So, you know, that adds to a different level of storytelling. So I kind of hope they would go for something like that to assign colors. You know, the S.H.I.E.L.D. agents, they don't really have uniforms, except for Coulson. I will argue that Coulson has a uniform. His uniform is a three-piece suit with a tie.
Yes, definitely. He wouldn't even look right in anything else.
Right, which I think is funny. That's what he chooses to put on when they go on this special ops mission. So
I noticed that, too. Kind of stood out.
Yeah. Well,
so I didn't mean to go off on a tangent, but that's one thing that kind of I think about a lot when they've taken, you know, comics and cartoons and transferred them to real life. And I think that's a very hard balance to get it to where it seems realistic enough, but still brings, you know, to mind those things that you're talking about with the color scheme. So
yeah, if you're not going to do animated, it's definitely more difficult, I think. So
sometimes I think it works and sometimes I think it doesn't. And sometimes it just kind of depends on the character.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, we'll have to see what's going to happen here with Graviton when he's going to come back. My guess is I would hope he would come back either right before or right after winter break. I think that'd be a good time to probably bring him back, you know, try to get him run for sweeps. But, you know, we're starting to build the universe here, obviously. This was a, you know, big origin story for that character. So we'll see what else they have in mind. You know, there's not much news out there on what's happening in upcoming episodes. It's
maybe now that they've announced the 22 full season episodes that we'll start to see some little teasers and hints at what's coming up.
Yeah, I think as far as we know right now, you know, they've only got preview images and stuff up through about the sixth episode now. So, like I said, I think I said this last week, they're kind of keeping about two episodes ahead or two mm-hmm. or three episodes ahead here. So, last time we were talking a lot about Coulson, and we had talked about him initially being an LMD, and then I was discussing his whole Tahiti is a magical place line from the last one. Something I forgot to add, and one of our readers or sorry, one of our listeners wrote into us with a note just wanting to talk a little bit about Coulson and his team. And this was from Matthew, and he you know, was talking about because we had talked about, you know, Coulson leading these different teams with the his lady friend. Can't even remember her name now. That's
Comandante Reyes.
Reyes, that one? Yeah. And he thought that the reason that she disrespected him was that you know, before he had, you know, he was basically leading this entire team of people that were like Ward, like Agent Ward, you know, well trained people in his command, and now he's out there and he's got Ward, but you know, he's also got, you know, basically these other kind of misfits, you know, May, who doesn't who doesn't really fit in anymore because she wants to be, you know, taken out of you know, combat, and Fitzsimmons and Sky and stuff like that, and maybe that she seems that he's gone soft or something like that. But in our discussion back and forth on this in mail, the other thing that I realized was when Sky's van was being cleared out, she had a little hula dancer or a little hula girl figure that was sitting on top of her dashboard that she took with her and put into her berth in the plane. You know, one of those ones where you kind of tap the head and it, you know, hulas back and forth.
A little bobble hula.
Bobble hula, right. So,
who's also a villain later in the season.
Hey, quick straw. So, but you know, that got me thinking, it's like, wow, okay. So there was all this talk about Tahiti in that episode, and they also had this little hula dancer, you know, who it looks like a character that you might see, you know, in or on Tahiti or something like that. But now this week, I got the definite vibe that they were kind of flip-flopping and saying, well, maybe he is more of an LMD because of some different lines that happened. I don't know if you had picked up on some of these things that happened. So I'll just tell you what I thought, and then you let me know if you know what your thoughts are on it. But Ward's teaching Sky how to disarm an opponent with a gun, and you know, shows her how to wrestle the gun out of someone's hand and then to, you know, move the slide on the automatic weapon to get the bullet out of the chamber. And so Coulson tries to do that, and he just can't quite get it. He says that, you know, they were talking earlier about muscle memory, and he's like, well, that's weird. That's, you know, I can't seem to get it. And he says, I must be a little rusty. And he says this twice. And it's like, well, interesting, you know, because robots rust. Or, you know, things made out of metal rust, you know, and if he is an LMD, and I don't know. I almost feel like they're playing us each week, and then they're going to come back, you know, in episode 12 and go, oh, no, yeah, he's just a regular guy. He got stabbed, and he just survived. And, you know, we've been messing with you this entire time.
They're so obvious. I don't think they're probably going to do that. At least I hope they don't do that. But,
yeah, I would hope not,
now,
too.
Now that they've thrown all these hints out, it needs to be something pretty good. So, and now are LMDs just, I mean, I guess they are robots, but are they just metal underneath? I mean, do they look like Terminator type underneath, or I don't know what they look like underneath.
I'm trying to remember. I've been reading some S.H.I.E.L.D. issues off and on here, but you know, you really don't see it too
much. I mean, I remember one where a comic, an older comic where, Nick Fury had a LMD, but it looked just like him, and they never really showed the inside. It was just, you know.
Yeah, that's the thing. It's like, you know, as far as it's kind of like I said last week, it's like a Battlestar Galactica. You know, it's like a Cylon. You know, you would not know from just looking at somebody whether they were or they weren't. And then, of course, the previews for the next week, I Spy, make it look like, well, either this rogue agent is an LMD, or she's under some kind of mind control, or who knows?
Well, I like the little hints that they're giving there. I guess maybe I shouldn't say little. They seem pretty big, but I'm looking for them now. So, so maybe they just stand out like that because they are. I mean, it is if Coulson hadn't died, you know, in the Avengers, and he said these lines, you wouldn't think twice about those lines. So maybe they are little hints.
Yeah, it's I don't know. So. it's you know, it's one of those things I think that they're putting in there for just these purposes, you know, to keep fans talking right. about this kind of stuff. So,
well, for me right now, the score on episode 3 of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Case File is I'm leaning towards an LMD.
Okay.
But hoping for something a little bit more creative.
Okay.
Even if it is an LMD, I hope they kind of do something, you know, very creative with it. So.
Okay. Well, I guess we'll see here. Yeah. So, speaking about Coulson, I wanted to ask you about his management style, his team management, and his, I guess kind of his people skills as well. He's got a very interesting approach in terms of leadership skills. And, you know, I kind of think about, as I'm watching him handle these five people on it, five people on his team with different personality types, different skill sets, different temperaments. I'm reminded of just different, you know, managers or bosses I've had in the past and like how they might deal with stuff like this. What are your thoughts on his style and his skills here?
Well, I think this, you know, I guess if I was a CEO, I don't know if I would always agree with it, but as for what he's doing, you can tell that he knows the potential of his team members, even if they don't know the potential of themselves, you know, mm-hmm. And he sees even greater potential with them working together, and he's letting them find that on their own. Now, when you do a TV series like that, you have, you know, you have the luxury of kind of stretching that out a little more. And so he can not come straight out and tell them, you know, what they're capable of and sure. not, do you know what I'm saying? So, yeah. I mean, you can, he can let them find out on their own through the missions that they do, you know, last week, it was Ward, this week it was Sky, you know, and they're slowly finding these things. I would guess that we're probably going to have like a Fitzsimmons episode and then, they'll probably top it all off with a Melinda May episode, mm-hmm. Because of who she is and her history of, you know, how yeah. long she's been around.
Yep.
Which I'm kind of okay with. I hope the whole season isn't character development like that. You know, I think we need to really get into a deep, mystery story sometime soon that they can keep, playing up a little bit, but
like that multi-story arc kind of thing.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So, so I think for this team and for the TV show as well, I think it's a good management style. I would like to see him a little bit more confident, like he was presented in the movies.
You don't think he's confident enough in some of the stuff he's doing? I mean, he made some hard choices this week, I think.
Yeah, yeah. Most of the time, I would say yes. I don't want to rub anybody the wrong way on this, but my least favorite scene with him was when he was getting chewed out by Samuel L. Jackson last week.
Well, it was a great Samuel L. Jackson scene, but yeah, it's not right. necessarily a great Coulson scene.
Exactly. Yeah, because he didn't seem real confident. You know, he seemed like a little kid getting yelled at, you know, by a parent. Which I'm not used to seeing Coulson. You know, Coulson's usually straightforward, and you know, he didn't even let, you know, Tony Stark intimidate him.
Yeah, right.
So I want to see that kind of confidence in the show. But again, you know, that's hard when you're spreading it out for so long, and you're getting to know these characters a lot more. You're gonna get down a little bit deeper in their character. So,
yeah.
But I like it. I like it better than him, you know, ordering people around in some kind of a. Oh gosh, I can't remember the comic character's name. He was an army, you know, officer. But back in the day when they used to have lots of World War II comics and stuff like that, I wouldn't want to see him ordering people around like that.
Like Sergeant Rock or something?
Sergeant Rock. Yeah, that's who I was thinking of. Yeah. I wouldn't want to see anything like Coulson doing that.
Sure, sure, sure. I mean, I thought that, you know, like you said, he knows the potential of his team, and, I think you know, in this episode, he talks about how he needs a two-man team to go in on the into the cove to help infiltrate the laser fence, which my opinion. That was just, it was just ridiculous. That whole sequence was just, that was probably my least favorite sequence. I mean, there were some funny gags, of course, seeing him running on the beach in his suit, you know, and Ward's dressed in a, you know, commando kind of gear. There was just some bad editing, and I thought it was kind of cheeseball with this laser fence that just was up and down. But he says he needs a two-man job, and Melinda May is like, you know, I've told you, there's Ward, and, you know, I don't want to go back into combat. And he's like, well, no, I was talking about myself. But, you know, I think he knew what he was doing. He was putting himself into the her place for that mission. But, you know, she really wanted to go, but she, you know, kind of had to save face. And I think he wanted, you know, to not make her uncomfortable and force her to do something like this. So he allowed her to come to, you know, that conclusion herself, you know, that she was ready to get back into the, you know, into the grind or whatever. However she
now you don't think he was just trying to make her see how much better she would do, or do you, I mean, you know what I'm saying? He wasn't trying to manipulate her into it. Do you think he was really trying to let her realize it on her own?
I do. I feel that I don't think Nick Fury seems to do things by manipulation and coercion.
I agree.
Malicious might be too strong. Yeah, that might be too strong a word, but it's premeditated.
There you go. Yeah.
Okay. Coulson. What I see with him is the fact that his character, like you said, he understands the synergy of individuals and how much, you know, greater than the sum of their parts they can be when they work together. So he sees that potential that might, you know, be his, you know, special mutant power or something like that, right? And I think that, you know, he knows May. And everything that she's capable of, because that's why he asked for her on the team. But he doesn't want to put her on the spot, embarrass her, or, you know, force her to do something that she's not ready to do yet. Which is why he says, you know, all I want you to do is fly the plane. And he apologized to her last episode after the altercation. He's like, you know, that won't happen again. And in this one, where it comes down to the part where, okay, this is where he's going to come and ask me, you know, to be on the crew. And she, you know, she preempts it and is like, you know, it's like, you know, I can't do this. And he's like, that's fine, because I wasn't going to ask you. So, you know, I really think that's, I think that's his, you know, a skill set and a strength in his character that, you know, he's allowing her the time to, you know, say, she looks at this and, you know, she might say, well, I could have done this better, or I would have done it this way. Or maybe it's something like, she's like, wow, I really, you know, I miss that kind of work. I don't just like sitting here on the sidelines. I want to get back into it. And which is why she comes to him at the end of the episode and says, you know, I really want to, you know, be back in on this.
You know, now that you say that, I'm glad you kind of explained that, because I agree with you. And you're right, because that is the kind of person Coulson is. He's not like a Nick Fury. And that makes more sense to me, because I thought it was kind of maybe not well thought out by him, you know, to try to manipulate her like that. So I'm glad you said it like that. I think you're right. I think he did try to let her see it on her own, which I like a lot better now that you said that.
Another character thing I would like to discuss, if we have some time here, which it looks like we do, is the Ward and Agent Ward and Agent Sky. Well, Sky, I guess we're not going to call her an agent yet, because she's kind of agent in training, A-I-T.
Right?
Agent in training. So he is doing this training stuff with her and becoming her supervising officer, her SO. And, you know, they are starting a new routine, and he's trying to, you know, show her discipline, and she's just kind of goofing around, and, you know, that's, you know, he doesn't really like that, because, you know, he's like, by the book, you know, like, you do it my way, you know, this is the way we train, this is how we do this, and, you know, all that kind of stuff. Coulson shows him, you know, that, you know, maybe there's another way to do this, right? Because he's treating her like an agent in training. Coulson suggests that he treat her like, you know, a human being, and just, you know, ask her how she's doing, and, you know, try a different method, which is what he does. That's what Coulson does. It's like he doesn't always do stuff by the book. His results may be the same because he kind of thinks outside the box. But what I wanted to ask about was there is a, you know, kind of a not necessarily a plot point, but, you know, a dialogue section here where Ward is talking about the defining moment. You know, every agent has this defining moment that kind of, I guess, indicates who they are, and we find out what his is at the end of the episode, which is kind of interesting because it's not a defining moment that he had as an agent, right? It's not like something that he went through. Melinda May's defining moment might be whatever she got into in Bahrain that, you know, caused her to want to go back and be a desk jockey. I guess we might find out about that later. But Ward's was this incident he had with his brother, you know, as like when he was 10 years old, getting beaten up by his brother. And, you know, that's kind of this little emotional exchange, which, I don't know, it didn't work especially well for me. But, you know, I saw that they were trying, you know, the writers were trying to connect Skye and Ward a little bit here. So did Skye have her defining moment in this episode, or is that something that we're still going to see?
Well, I think it was intended to be her defining moment, and I think...
And before you go on then, so which moment is her defining moment?
Right, that's... I think it was when she didn't betray S.H.I.E.L.D., when she was with Quinn.
Okay, mm-hmm. I'd agree with that, yeah.
And I think that was kind of intended to be it, when, you know, she made the decision to go along and do what she was supposed to do. And
okay, but how about this? So before you go, let me just kind of keep working this thread here then. So at the end of episode 2, the Rising Tide people on her phone, you know, asked her what her status was, and she said, "I'm in," you know, kind of meaning that we took to mean she's, you know, in S.H.I.E.L.D., she's infiltrated S.H.I.E.L.D., right? Mm-hmm. So in this one, there is kind of the continuation of that. Well, is she this kind of double agent? She writes a note, you know, to Quinn on a piece of paper saying, you know, S.H.I.E.L.D. is listening and, you know, appears to be betraying them, but doesn't. Two parts, I guess, to this. Is she really still working the Rising Tide aspect of it and just chose not to, you know, chose to look like she was defecting from S.H.I.E.L.D. or working against S.H.I.E.L.D. to get Quint on Quinn's good side? And if so, are we going to see more of the, you know, the stuff with Rising Tide where she's maybe feeding them some other stuff and that's going to continue on? Or is that all just kind of wrapped up by this plot?
No, I don't think they'll wrap it up. I think that's a little bit too, I don't even want to say clean, because it's almost like they kind of just threw that plot point out if they do it like that. But right. I think she was kind of going back and forth. You know, I think she saw, you know, revealing that she was with S.H.I.E.L.D. to Quinn. I think she saw that as an opportunity to, well, you know, maybe save herself from whatever might happen when she got caught. But I also think she probably thought about it. You know, I also think she probably considered going with Quinn and, you know, doing the stuff that he was suggesting, being with, you know, working for him. And I think she probably did. That's why I think that was probably her defining moment. She made the decision, no, you know what? I'm going to do the right thing. I'm going to be loyal to the people that I made a promise to. And I'm going to suddenly learn how to take the gun out of this guy's hand.
Yeah.
So I think that was probably intended to be her defining moment. I'm not sure realistically it will be. I mean, they'll probably have much more serious situations where she's in more peril than she probably was in this episode.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. I mean, for this storyline, it's like, oh yeah, that's her defining moment, but it just seems it's kind of trite because
I agree. Well,
for what I've seen from her character, it doesn't seem like that defining, right?
I agree.
But again, for this storyline, it is. So,
well, and I'm, you know, I hate to say this because I really am enjoying the show. I mean, I'm not I'm not dissing the show or anything, but I almost think there's been quite a few things so far that I've seen that were trite. So hopefully they'll get a little bit away from that, and maybe they can kind of expand their ideas now that they know for sure there's going to be more episodes. But and once this, the characters kind of get established too.
Yeah, so. That's true. They might have been hedging their bets a little bit just in terms of like – how they want to do character arcs and stuff.
Right. And that's the other reason I think maybe that the episodes were a little bit more cleanly wrapped up. I think they might be able to expand them more now. So,
I mean, it's only three, you know, it's like, we're talking about this, like, oh my God, they're, you know, and I'm seeing much more critical talk about it online. It's like, you know, oh my gosh, I've given up this show already. It's like, it's three episodes, people. I mean, how can you say you like or don't like anything? I mean, it took me, I'm going to say like six or eight episodes of Lost, and you were getting what, like 20 different storylines. It's like, you know, they hit some of the main people, but it's like, you know, I want to see something with Sawyer. Well, I don't even remember if they did a Sawyer story for a season for Lost. You know, it's, again, I don't know how you can say after only three episodes that.
Well, put it in perspective. Okay. If this is a 22 episode, season.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so three episodes is 13% of the season.
Okay.
13%. If you go into a movie, you're giving up 15 minutes into the movie.
15 minutes, okay.
15 minutes into the movie.
In like a two-hour movie.
Yeah, a two-hour movie, you know, times 13%, that's 15 minutes.
Okay.
So you know, that to me, that seems like way too soon to give up on a movie.
Yeah.
And to me, a season, especially a show like this, I consider to be kind of like a big, you know, movie, or at least a mini series like they used to do back in the 70s, you know, Roots.
Roots.
Okay, I'm not comparing this to Roots.
North and South. what else? Shogun?
Shogun. Oh, see, that was where I should have gone. Yeah. Shogun.
Okay, well. I got two other questions for you. One of them, I think, is, well, actually, they're both probably relatively quick. So the title of the episode is called The Asset. Who is the asset?
I think it was Sky.
You think it's Sky? Okay.
I think it was Sky because it seemed like this was kind of a story, and, you know, as anticlimactic as her defining moment may have been.
Sure.
It still seemed like it was about her, for the most part, like last week's was Ward, you know?
Yeah.
But I also think that, you know, they used that connection with her being the asset from Ward's line on the first episode connected to, the scientist, you know, Dr. Hall.
Mm-hmm.
So I think they kind of used them in conjunction, but I think that the title probably focused more on Sky.
Yeah, I'd have to agree with that. I think that on the surface, the asset is Dr. Hall. Mm-hmm. But I think what we're really supposed to understand is that Sky has become the asset that Coulson thinks that she can be. You know, and she's now become the team player that Ward was worried about her being able to be. And, you know, she's kind of coming in line and getting everybody, you know, and everybody's kind of aligning on the team, you know, and they're all starting to face the same direction and, you know, kind of understand how everybody works together.
Mm-hmm.
My other question, and this, we can take this through, you know, the other movies and stuff like this, but what kind of organization in this universe, in this, you know, entertainment franchise universe is S.H.I.E.L.D.? Because it seems, okay, so there's the voiceover at the beginning by Sky in the pilot episode about, you know, how there's this, you know, kind of covert, she makes it sound like it's this almost this black ops group called S.H.I.E.L.D. that kind of comes in and cleans up stuff before anybody has anything to find out, you know, doesn't, you know, find out about it.
Yeah.
That's what they did after the Avengers, supposedly. They went in and cleaned up New York and, you know, didn't leave a trace of, you know, what happened. And it's this big mystery organization. But in the show here, it also seems like it's pretty public and everybody knows about it. Ian Quinn's doing a, you know, PowerPoint presentation for all of his people. And he talks about the U.S. government, the EU, the DRTC, which if anyone has any idea what that might be, Googling does not help. It's, like, you know, the Democratic Republican Tea Cozy Party or something like that. I don't know. But
maybe it's a rapper. Rapper. Yeah. Dr. TC. Maybe.
Oh, yeah. and then S.H.I.E.L.D. is listed. So basically, if we're assuming the DRTC, because it had some other logo, so if we're assuming it's some sort of worldwide organization of some kind, and then the U.S. government and the EU, which are, you know, probably the two largest, government organizations on the planet, and S.H.I.E.L.D. gets lumped in with this, well, obviously it's public enough to know about that. Do you have any ideas about how that fits in here with the...
Yeah, now... I could tell you my initial impression, and then I can explain it away to make it work. So,
oh, sure. Oh, yeah.
So you know, my initial impression is like you said. I mean, it seems almost public, almost like just like a branch of the CIA that specializes in superhero alien type stuff. You know?
And they got their logos on their cars and all this kind of stuff. So
yeah. So which, you know, honestly, that kind of stuff wouldn't be uncommon in a comic. You know, the logos and things like that, I suppose, even for a secret
comic. Yeah.
So, and you know, I'm looking at this as a comic. Now here I'll explain it away, the PowerPoint presentation. So, you know, Quinn was meeting with supposedly powerful people.
Yeah, like backers, right? Potential backers, I guess. Right.
And I would guess that backers and the powerful people and the rich people that might be involved in something like this with him would probably know something about S.H.I.E.L.D. I've never really seen any indication that they're like a Men in Black type secret kind of government organization.
Yeah, not specifically, but they, you know, it's these guys that mysteriously show up and take a hammer out of the middle of a desert, you know, from all these guys and trucks that are trying to move it, and then they just kind of move in and whoop, it's gone.
To me, it's more of like a government organization that's, you know, known, but you just don't know exactly what they do.
Okay, yeah, I see that. That's a good point.
So, I mean, you know, so like I said, I could explain it away to make it work.
Oh, sure.
But I don't know that they're using that enough. I mean, I think it does seem a little bit more public. I mean, she knew about Sky knew about it, but you know, then again, she was a hacker that knew a lot about that stuff, and then all those people in Malta,
right?
Which I've been to Malta, and it is a magical place. But maybe
nice.
I don't know. So hopefully they'll kind of explain that a little bit more, but they, you know, they've got big old vaults to keep secret stuff in and hidden away, like in Raiders of the Lost Ark, and so they are doing stuff, I think, that's not common knowledge.
Well, and interesting. So, you know, they even in episode 2, the whatever the name, the 084, which doesn't have any other name, was blasted off into space on the Slingshot to get sent to the sun. For the gravitonium, Coulson actually calls out to Agent Tyler and says, I want you to put this away. I want you to, you know, hide every trace that this was ever transferred here. So instead of, you know, and he says, I don't want it on the Slingshot manifest or whatever. So, you know, they remove the little nameplate on the door and everything just to make it go away. But it's still here. Other than, you know, I'm just kind of getting to this thought right now, which is kind of weird, you know, because other than the plot point of, well, we as the audience now know that Dr. Hall is stuck inside this and is trying to get out, as what we see him, you know, reaching out at the end. What's the reason to keep this stuff around if the 084 was so dangerous that it can't fall into the hands of anybody? Why does he want to keep the gravitonium around? That seems even more dangerous.
Well, do you think – I agree with that, but maybe Coulson – suspects that he didn't die. Maybe Coulson suspects that Hall could have survived somehow.
That seems more dangerous than all that. I mean, it's like,
yeah, well, yeah, I mean,
because if he didn't die and he's stuck in there, you know, he's got to have seen enough movies to know that guy's coming back for him.
Well, you know, he reads comic books and he's a fan of, you know, Captain America. So
exactly.
Yeah, you'd think it.
Right.
Maybe that's what he wants.
Last snippet. I want a one word sentence on Agent Mac. I mean, sorry, not a one word sentence. I want one sentence
of your one word. Was that good? Yeah. A one-word sentence on Agent. I mean, see, now I'm doing it.
Yeah, one sentence on Agent Mac. What's your thoughts?
Oh gosh, I hadn't really thought about Agent Mac.
Cool ass truck driver. Bring him back.
I agree with that. I'll tell you. Okay, I'll come up with a sentence, but first I'll tell you my daughter's one sentence to Agent Mac.
Oh, okay.
How is he still alive?
My son said that as well. He was like, "You can't expect to fall from that height and not be dead." And my other son, my younger son, said, "Yeah, but you heard him go, so he's still alive."
And he was in a special truck. You know, he could have landed just right. But okay, my one sentence on Agent Mac. I got to see more of him.
Okay,
I like it. That was two. I'm sorry.
The fact that he was driving a Peterbilt, I believe, or no, he was driving a Freightliner. But the fact, you know, Agent Mac, it was a Mack truck, right? You know,
of course, yeah.
That was a nice little take there. So, I was that.
I guess I'm
shocked
Agent
me.
Toyota.
Yeah, when he brought up the heads up display, I was like, "Whoa, wait, what's going on?" Because, you know, it's like he wasn't seeming like he was a SHIELD operative in any way. I thought he was, you know, just a normal truck driver that had some
freelance truck driver for SHIELD,
or that he was a bad, or that it was a bad guy group. You know, when we were going to see SHIELD take down, you know, some people that were stealing weaponry or something like that, right?
Yeah.
So I thought it was going to be flipped. I thought they were the bad guys, and SHIELD were the ones that were knocking the cars away.
Oh, that didn't occur to me, but I didn't anticipate what was in his truck.
Yeah, exactly, right. That was all
so
kind
I didn't
of surprise.
Think about that. But see, he's the kind of character though that I would like to see on this show. He's unique. He's different. He's not what you would expect. You know, you didn't expect him to be an agent, all that. He's so much more interesting to watch than the Quinn type of character. Mm-hmm. Just your basic rich bad guy.
He's the Wedge Antilles of SHIELD.
maybe the Porkins.
Maybe Porkins. Okay. All right. Well said. Well, so that's about all we have for this week's episode of Agents of SHIELD Case Files.
Yeah. Well, thanks for joining us again. But if you enjoy this episode, make sure you leave feedback on iTunes for us. You can also contact us by email. I was very happy to get some email this week.
Yeah, that was great. It was great to hear from everybody, and we'd love to hear more. Any thoughts you guys have about the show or anything we say on the episode, you know, if you guys are liking the show, either if you're liking the TV show, but if you're liking the podcast, feel free to mail in and let us know. And if there's stuff that we could change or you're not happy with stuff on the TV show, let us know as well. We can start a discussion on that as well.
I like feedback. Unless that's the name of an evil villain, I don't like feedback.
Well, I'm going to say, okay, there's probably a character named Feedback.
I bet you're right.
Yeah.
Inevitable. Okay, that wasn't a copyright somebody. I apologize for that. Don't make me pay for that. But please email us at shield@randomchatter.com. You can also get a hold of us on Twitter. That's @agentspodcast. And our Facebook page, which is facebook.com/agentspodcast.
Yeah, and be sure to check out that Facebook page. I'll throw up pictures of Lola from New York Comic Con, as well as this guy dressed up as Nick Fury.
Maybe Lola was in disguise at Comic Con. That's why there was no SHIELD logo on
that
end button.
That's true. Even though it said, you know, come see Lola from SHIELD.
Well, it is a public, government agency, so, you know.
Also, be sure to check out the other show that Josh and I host, Green Justice and Arrow Podcast, which follows the TV show Arrow, which is on CW, which just started its second season. And that is also available on randomchatter.com. And if you enjoy this podcast, please be sure to tell all your friends about us. Let them know that you listen and that they should be listening as well. So for Agents of SHIELD Case Files, this is Jay.
And this is Josh.
Signing off from Level 7. This podcast is not endorsed by ABC Television or Marvel Entertainment. The official website for Marvel's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. can be found at www.agentsofshield.com. Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. and related elements are copyright Marvel Entertainment, LLC.
Transmission terminated.